Hey everyone, welcome to Game Grooves Uncovered, and I'm here with Charles Ritz. Did I say your last name correctly?
That's right.
That's right? Cool.
It's like the cracker.
Just like the cracker? Amazing.
Oh yeah.
I love it whenever people have last names with something that you can relate to.
For sure.
Example, so Ritz, right? My last name is Gillette, and I can just say Gillette just like the razor.
It's perfect.
So, it's beautiful. But yeah, you guys should all know him from his incredible work doing VGM covers, jazz covers, and, you know, being all over the place. He's great. You should know him. Do you think that's a good enough introduction for you?
That sounds wonderful to me.
That sounds wonderful to you? Great. So, awesome. Let's just hop right into it. I want to talk about one of the more recent things that happened with you. You got Twitch affiliate, right?
Yes, I did.
So, that's exciting. Do you want to... So, how long have you been doing Twitch?
So, I've streamed a few times. I used to stream on YouTube just because I figured that was more of where the already existing fan base was for whatever I did. But a while ago, I realized to myself, Twitch has got besides such a thriving community in its own right, it's got, you know, so many more features to make streaming convenient and like to engage with your audience in a really unique way. And I really also fell in love with just the unique community that exists on Twitch. You know, folks like Pat Bartley and Dom Palombi and all those guys are really doing great stuff on Twitch. So I was really excited to start to be a part of that. So once I moved back into my space in Boston about a month ago where I go to school, I figured that now would be the time to really lean into it and give it a try. And mostly I've just been doing solo piano stuff because the day will get away from me and I'll always stream really late at night. I have so many more instruments I want to play, but I can't because I have neighbors and I want to be a good
boy. You want to be a good neighbor. Don't want to have any noise complaints or anything.
For sure. But I want to really get into it more. It's been so much fun. I think in this weird time when there's such a lack of live music and people performing for other folks, it really scratches that itch. And I'm really grateful that a platform like that exists so I can entertain people. Because that I realized while I was just while I've been in school and playing with different people's bands and getting more performance opportunities than I had growing up, that I enjoy it so much. Mm. It's far different from what I normally see myself doing, but whenever I get to do it, it's just the biggest treat in the world.
Beautiful. So how is it different playing live on Twitch than, you know, recording or even playing live, you know, in a concert or something like that? Is it similar or is there different vibes to it?
It's definitely similar in the way of you get, you know, it's a more raw thing than a studio recording, right? Like when you're recording a cover or an arrangement, just any kind of song, you get to go back, you get to do other takes, you get to really nail down the perfect one. Just with live stuff in general, obviously it's more in the moment. It's more, you know, the one take is the take in
the
a way.
One take is the take. Beautiful.
Yeah. I think what's cool about the Twitch thing is that because I've been leaning into live learning stuff, like a little bit of confusion in do-overs is a little more understandable. Like the other day I was playing, I was doing New Donk City from Mario Odyssey and I couldn't remember. It's such a good tune. It's so good. I couldn't remember one section right at the end. So like, I took a second and I just remembered it to myself, and that was totally fine because you just get to go right back into it. So that was something really cool for me. And then also, more than anything, I think just the fact that audience interaction is such a big part of it. Mm. Because with a live crowd, you get some of that. You know, you can, in pre-COVID times, you can run into the crowd. You can, you know, dance around, yell at them, get them to sing things at you. But on Twitch, you can have conversations with the people in your chat. You really get to know who they are and where they come from, which I think is a really unique dynamic between a performer and their audience, even more so when they are spread out all around the world.
Absolutely. And yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, and doing YouTube, I've gotten a pretty good sense of that, especially because so many of my friends from a very young age kind of came from all over the world. And in a way, my YouTube, my arrangements would serve as a performance to them wherever they were. But it's a different kind of thing when you realize someone in New York could be listening to you the same time as someone in Indonesia. And it's the same way with, you know, Spotify breakdowns. You get to see where people are enjoying your music, which is a very surreal thing to think about. But Twitch, I think, has just made that so much more apparent.
That's beautiful. I love that. Yeah, it really does, like, it opens it up, and it's a more of a conversation than what you could probably get on YouTube or any other type of site.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, I was going to talk about some other stuff that I planned, but I want to talk about your time at Berkeley, because I know that Insane the Rain just recently graduated there. So I'm sure I already know the answer, but if you're okay with this, I want to ask, why did you choose Berkeley and what kind of experiences are you getting there?
Sure thing. I think the initial drop in the pan, I guess, that started the entire Berkeley thing was, if you know the fan games, Sonic Before the Sequel and After the Sequel,
I think those sound,
just fan games made by one dude with a really amazing sound team. Falk Ah Young, James Landino, Funk Fiction, Michael Staple, who's a Game Grooves artist.
Oh, beautiful.
I think he's his Quickfire album with Harpsona is coming out soon.
Oh, sweet. So I feel like I should know that.
No, don't worry. Yeah. I just found out today. I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Beautiful.
So all those guys are super inspiring to me when I was just starting to realize that, hey, music is a thing that I can make from my home. I don't necessarily need a big old studio to do this. And this was like when this was right around middle school that this was happening. I started to look into it more, started to reach out to James. I started to get to know him a little bit. And then I learned that a lot of these guys went to Berkeley. And that was sort of the initial inspiration. It's like, yes, this is what I want to do. And I want to, even more so when I found out they had a program for video game scoring.
Oh, that's fantastic. I didn't know that.
And yeah. So I am minoring in that, as well as pursuing my full bachelor's degree in contemporary writing and production with soon to declare an additional minor in conducting, because I've really gotten a love for that over the past year, taking those types of classes. I got kind of sidetracked. Remind me.
The question was why you chose Berkeley and kind of how you're liking it.
Right. I remember what I was going to say, because I think the other big thing was getting to go to a Berkeley summer program in 2017. I got to go to their 5-week program, and that gave me a very good primer as to what some of the school would be like, got to meet some of the faculty, and got to meet the people that would become some of my best friends even now, because a lot of those people I went to the program with all came to the school with me.
That
really helped in terms of just meeting people and getting out there and having people to play with and make music with from the moment I got there.
That really helped a lot. Beautiful. Continue.
And then just my experiences at the school have all been super, super enjoyable. I've learned so much just about the real joys of making music, because as I was kind of alluding to before, growing up, I didn't get to make music in person a lot. It was very much YouTube based, and a lot of the friends I had both in music and in general were online, and it scratched the itch, but man, playing with real people with who really have a good grasp of their instrument and a good amount of facility on it, there's nothing like it. Mm-hmm. Nothing at all. I think that didn't hit until, you know, we couldn't get to do it anymore.
Mm. All right.
I've gotten so much faster at what I do as well, because the year before this, I got to write for a lot of different student projects and for concerts, and getting to watch my music come to life in person, as opposed to just getting recordings, dragging them in, and hearing the final thing, was one of the most exciting experiences of my life. One moment I remember in particular was when I was walking home one day with a good friend who's now my roommate, and we were just talking about general life issues we were having and like thoughts about careers and music. And I was talking about how I really just was feeling creatively drained and very doubtful about myself. And then I started remembering one of these experiences I had where I got to hear my arrangement played by a group of people who said they really enjoyed it. They enjoyed playing it. And I just got beyond emotional about it. And that was one of those really defining experiences that told me, hey, this is still the right thing for you. You made the right choice going here. So I think the fact that Berklee has given me so many of those experiences is makes it beyond worth it for me alone. And then just the friends I've gotten to make, some of the best people in the world. I'm so grateful to all of them. They give me something, you know, that I want to go back to, because the choice was made. The choice was put in front of me at the start of this year. Do I stay home? Do I stay home in New York and do my school virtually? Or do I go back and get to be with the people that I care so much about? And ultimately, I think I made the right choice.
For sure. Yeah. That's great. That's better than any response I could have hoped for. So, but I think this actually comes up with an interesting question. I know I'm asked this all the time as a recent film graduate, where people ask, was university or college worth it? In such a creative field where degrees don't necessarily matter as much, do you recommend, in your opinion, do you think that college has its value still in a creative environment, even though the degree may or may not matter? Is the lessons that you learn throughout worth it?
The real college degree was the friends we made along the way.
Exactly. Beautiful.
I say that, you know, as a joke, but I really do believe that.
Oh yeah, you know, absolutely.
Because we live in such an age where information is so readily available, and it's a blessing and a curse in a way. But I think, you know, the learning, it definitely depends, and it's definitely the answer is going to differ from person to person and field to field. Excuse me. We had really good pasta tonight, and that was my compliments to the chef.
compliments to the chef. Beautiful.
Oh, yeah. one of the examples I always mention, I think I've heard someone else use a similar one, but the fact that, you know, you get all these different life experiences convening in one place, all working toward a different goal, but all from different perspectives and different, you know, outcomes in mind, really just makes for a unique experience to learn about so many different things. The example I use is that you don't, when you're working on an arranging assignment and you want to figure out what a Brazilian samba groove looks like, feels like, you don't have to read it from a textbook. You can walk down the hall, ask your Brazilian roommate how this works, and they can show you examples and really dive into the true significance of that. And I think that's a really amazing thing that you can kind of only get from an experience, you know, at an ideally in-person university.
Beautiful.
And I'm grateful for a lot of those experiences with people around the world.
Yeah, I think it's great to have in-person university stuff. It's funny how similar your thing about the real degree are the friends you make along the way. That is a much more clearer way of what I tell everyone, where it's like, for me at least, the school more or less didn't matter. I didn't go to the greatest college, but I always tell everyone that the people that you meet at whatever university absolutely makes it worth it. And, you know, it's different for everyone, but absolutely, I think.
For sure.
Yeah. It's funny, I did not intend on asking you this question, but it just came up, and I'm happy to do it. So for anyone who is in high school right now and trying to decide if you want to do college or not, you don't have to take this advice, but here's just something to think about, to meditate on and whatnot.
So, if I may indulge real quick and tell absolutely. One of my favorite stories that kind of revolves around this whole idea that I've enjoyed making music with people so much, but some of my best memories going to school so far have been when we're not doing anything music related at all.
Mm.
So I want to give a shout out to my mom, Mama Ritz.
Mama Ritz.
She's the Italian side of the family. So just great food everywhere. My dad's Puerto Rican, so we've got the goods.
You got the tasty food all around.
Oh yeah.
Oh
yeah. So my first semester, just baby college boy. my mom hooks me up with some of her homemade meatballs, which I've grown up on them. Mm-hmm. I love them to bits. So she goes, "Hey, here are 60 meatballs or so. You can have them for yourself, or you could share them with your friends." So I give them to my roommates, and they really enjoy them. And then I start inviting people in, you know, other friends, maybe friends we haven't met yet at that point, and they just start having these meatballs, and then these grow and grow till every time I come back to Boston from New York, I would bring a whole nother batch of what started as 60 would become some in the vein of 100 meatballs.
Dang.
You'd throw in lasagna, you'd throw in different Italian desserts, and it's ridiculous. So come time to move into my own space, mm-hmm. where we have, you know, our own bigger fridge, and we can host more people in the before times,
uh-huh.
and we get to host this big meatball party where 20-25 of my closest friends get to come eat great food, enjoy great company, and just be together. Uh-huh. And that is so important. That's so, I smile looking back. You know what? That honestly may have been a year ago today.
I think
either a year ago today or a year ago tomorrow at the time of recording.
Wow, that's incredible.
It's just, I love things like that. I love getting to see my friends be together and be happy and enjoying each other. And I think those are the experiences that make college experiences, just being with people, like nothing else in the world. And for that alone, I'll always be so grateful.
That's beautiful. That put a smile on my face listening to that. That is so great.
Put a smile on mine talking about it.
Yeah.
I'm like, this was the first semester where the three roommates, we ate the meatballs ourselves because we can't host big things.
Oh.
And like, of course, they're still good. It's good to just share them at all and see people happy.
Yeah.
So it's still more than worth it. And shout out, honestly, to my parents and my family for instilling that in me from the very beginning. I'm thinking of every big holiday celebration we'd get to have together. And the importance of family was so stressed for so long. And I try to bring that wherever I go. Mm. I treat, you know, friends are family when they're really good, when they're really trusted. That's why just MAGFest is just a big family reunion, honestly.
Oh. Yeah, I've heard nothing but fantastic things about MagFest. I personally haven't gone.
Next year.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
maybe.
Yeah, maybe not, because didn't they cancel MagFest 2021?
It's canceled for 21.
Yeah. So 22, I will be there.
22, that's the hope.
That's the hope.
Or we'll just host a smaller thing where just VGM people come and hang.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah. VGM meatball party.
VGM meatball party. Oh.
And like you could talk to Carlos about this as well. He's come and tried some of the meatballs.
He's enjoyed the meatballs. Can attest.
He has enjoyed the meatballs.
Well, whenever I inevitably get him on, I'll ask him about those meatballs.
Oh, good.
Yes. And if I don't, everyone hold me accountable.
Good.
Beautiful. Well, let's talk about some of your music that you've made over the years and just talk about it. Maybe not over the years. I didn't dig too deep back. But let's talk about some of your recent stuff. So... Sure. Before we even do that, I want to talk about, and Charles and I were talking about this right before the podcast started. We've actually worked on a couple of projects where we both had our hands in it, but we've never interacted with each other.
We have.
Yeah, until now, which I think is super fascinating. There's like, what? It was the Smash medley with Roe. The winter medley, winter theme medley, and
then just work on, work on different works on Cry of the Planet.
Yeah, Cry of the Planet. Yeah, that's what it was. I just think it's funny how you could work on a project together, but almost never have any type of interaction.
Yeah, and like, you know of the different names
that
are involved just from hearing them so much and from different people's portfolios, but when the paths cross, it's always a really cool thing.
Yeah, it's super cool.
I think like going back to the MagFest thing, that was part of the thing about my going, was it was a lot of people that some of them I knew, some of them I knew of, and by the time I left that convention, I considered them, good friends, and I was, Our paths had crossed so many times indirectly that when they do, it just leads to really great things.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I love it. The sweetie is great. I love all of it. let's talk about some of the albums, like I said before, before I got sidetracked by myself. Let's talk about Life Will Change on Cry of the Planet. So this was, for anyone who doesn't know, the charity album that Game Grooves made for Black Lives Matter, and all of the proceeds went to Black Lives Matter or some other similar charity.
To the Minnesota Freedom Fund.
Yeah, that's what it was. I feel like I really need to prep some of this extra stuff and not have the guest work on it, but you know what? It works out. We all get the right information eventually. Thank you.
Teamwork.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Yes, sir.
So your track was Life Will Change. Can you talk about the process of choosing that song, why you chose it? There's a whole bunch of collaborators on it, so why you chose the collaborators and, kind of the results of it.
Sure. So I saw the call that went out on Twitter to be on Cry of the Planet a little bit late. Mm-hmm. I was a little later than other folks getting into the game. But as soon as I was thinking about the time that the album was being made and subject matter being dealt with and what our end goal is in all of this, is that, life will change, people will learn, and that, voices of the people can, rise above all. Especially once I looked at some of the lyrics of Life Will Change, things like swatting lies in the making, our voices ring out, and we know that life will change. Mm-hmm. Like lines like that really sold me on this is the song that that I've got to do. And I feel like I can use this as a way to empower people, give them hope in the face of unending darkness, because that's what, that was a lot of what I got from the general social climate then was just despair and anguish. And that's absolutely an important part. You should be allowed to feel those things. But I wanted to provide whatever sort of little light that I could in that thing of hope that could just, I don't know.
Yeah. That's great.
So once Alan gave me the go-ahead to start working on that song, the whole thing, start to finish, took about 6 days.
Wow.
which still blows my mind. And that goes back to the thing about getting fast at what you do, getting fast at the workflow. Mm-hmm. I would not have been able to get it done this fast if I didn't have experience arranging for those instruments, working in the programs that I do, and getting it done with, you know, relative speed a lot of the time, which is funny because when you look at the general output of my channel, I know that I very much fall into the trap of sitting on things for too long. But when you light that fire under my butt, man, I it just happens every single time. And it turns out so good. I just need to hold myself to that more. But anyway, yeah, the arrangement idea kind of came to me pretty quick. Like, I wanted to use Let's Groove by Earth, Wind, and Fire sort of as the foundation for all of that. So that's where the idea for Talkbox bass came from. And, you know, having pop horn section all throughout that. That's where that idea kind of stemmed from. And then I just let it go in whatever zany direction from there. There's like a breakdown in that and like all these different elements that I didn't even see coming while I was arranging. And this is sort of the beauty of having collaborators that you can trust. Some of these people threw in things that I didn't even anticipate them doing. Let's see. Xeno Keys on Talkbox. Man, I remember when he was sending me stuff for this tune. He was recording all through 4 a.m. and I was just awake with him recording things and sending demos. I think I was on the phone with some of my school friends. And I was just freaking out as he was sending me things. Like, oh my God, this is so good. And he layered in. I didn't even write a part for him. I was just, hey, here are all the parts. I want you mainly doing the bass, but if you have any other ideas, just do them. And then he recorded 7 parts, and it's the coolest thing in the world.
That's beautiful.
And then you've got John Stacy. He works with the Game Brass. He's got his own project, February 33rd, Jazz Orchestra. I wrote a trumpet part for him that was pretty safe, you know, not pushing a lot of stuff. And then he's just like, hey, here's a lot of this part up an octave, like really popping, because that works for the style. And I feel like you wanted this, but you're hesitant to give it to me. And I'm like, this is exactly right, because I threw it in and my mind was blown.
Oh, beautiful.
And then you get Znarki, who I had record guitar 1. And then he hit me because of some of the arranging choices I made. He said, hey, mind if I throw down some baritone guitar on this?
Ooh.
It was just like this heavy, low, chugging element underneath everything. It's just like, oh my God.
Oh.
I think one of my favorite parts of working on that project was muting everything except the 3 guitars, which is electric guitar 1, which was Snarky, guitar 2, which is my roommate, Dove Beck Levine, and the baritone guitar, also Snarky. Just that whole beautiful guitar sound was so cool. And that, I think, is the beauty in picking collaborators that you know what they do and you trust their creative choices to enhance your work.
Yeah. Well, it definitely, all of that paid off and just blended so well. That is one of my favorite tracks. I mean, the whole album is fantastic, but yours, absolutely fantastic. It's on my playlist. Listening to that bop all the time. I love it.
I really appreciate that, man. Yeah. Thank you. I think it's definitely still my favorite production I've ever made. And considering how fast it came together, how many folks are involved with that, you know,
yeah,
I still look back on it. I'm very proud of it.
6 days. That is just incredible.
It's nuts.
That is, oh, wow. I'm shocked. I'm shocked.
And like, there, I have past experiences where, you know, a single part of the process would take that long. Maybe arranging would take 6 days in total, but this was start to finish. I think the arrangement process was maybe 4 or 5 hours, something like that. It came together very fast.
That's incredible.
And then I just, I wish I had more time just to give my collaborators, just like, hey, I would rather not in the future. And these were different circumstances, obviously, but I wouldn't want to always say, hey, here are his apart. Give it to me by like tomorrow. That doesn't always go over the best. But
yeah, that doesn't go great.
Luckily, I have friends who are generally understanding and stuff like that, and they kill it every time.
Beautiful. That is fantastic. Well, there was another big project that you did also, which was the Spiral Mountain cover with lyrics.
Yes.
Yeah. Talk about that whole process there. I listened to the song and I've seen like the reactions to it, but I don't know any of the story beforehand. So
Spiral Mountain, I think, Grant Kirkhope's entire soundtrack could kind of lead itself very well to like, big band arrangements. And I think especially Spiral Mountain, like, once Materia Community announced they were doing a Banjo-Kazooie album, that idea came to my mind right away without even a second thought. And it's always intimidating taking on big tunes like that. Excuse me. Just because they are so iconic and there are so many other versions out there, you gotta, you know, think about how you can make yours stand out and make it really special and give it the treatment it deserves. So I think the original idea was just big band with a clarinet feature for my friend Cameron McIntyre, another Berklee student who's a really cool dude, really great, great player. And then I don't think it was until I met Tiggs at Magfest, absolute sweetheart, lovely vocalist, that I was like, she would make a really good kazooie in a Banjo-Kazooie musical. So the ideas kind of merged together in my mind. Like, let's make Spiral Mountain sort of an opening number to a Banjo-Kazooie musical.
That's beautiful.
Let's make it about these two characters ready to go on this adventure. You know, Kazooie's really gung-ho, and Banjo's kind of scared. He doesn't exactly want to go on the adventure. And I was like, I'll play Banjo because it's fun. I get to do a go-huh. Go-huh. That was one of the most fun recording sessions I've ever gotten to do.
Oh, I'm sure. Because
that was, I did that one at Berklee.
Oh, beautiful. Because
as a contemporary writing and production student, you get access to some of the smaller recording suites that are available.
Ooh.
So I got to take one for 2 hours and just sing into the mic as Banjo.
That's
which
beautiful.
Which was beyond fun. And then just, again, that went through the usual process of the arrangement coming together, sending it out to all these different people to play on. And they all killed it. Tiggs killed it. She did a great job. And then I just kind of sent it off and let it be for a while once that was done. That was also like Zach Kohlmeier, who was helping me to produce the album, helped to write the lyrics because I ran into sort of a just a creative bump regarding those, just like the best way to explain what I wanted to explain and just set up the story I wanted to do. I think one of the coolest things I left in of what he did that was so sick, the line that goes, "This is nuts. I just want to bolt."
I love it.
It's Banjo-Kazooie. I love it. And like, this is brilliant. It's staying in. And that's been one of the most prominent comments I've been seeing on that video. Just people pointing out that lyrics like, ah, you cheeky man. I see what you did.
Oh,
That's cute. And so after the audio all came together, the ideal would be me and Tiggs meeting up, filming a really goofy music video where she's Kazooie and I'm Banjo, and we just make it a big old thing.
Oh, that would be beautiful. I'd watch that.
I still want to do that. The video is out in the world. Like, the lyric video exists, uh-huh. and it's out in the world. But someday, whenever circumstances permit, I really do want to meet up with her and just plan something really goofy. Because that would be great. But for the moment, the lyric video does exist. And for that, I just wanted to do a bouncing ball karaoke kind of thing, but have the different heads of the characters moving across. So as Banjo speaks, it's his head, and Kazooie speaking, it's her head, and all that. It was my first ever After Effects project, like actual video edited in there, which was certainly different for me.
Oh, for sure.
And like figuring out all the, like, that was just a lot of keyframing.
Oh yeah. There was a project that I did when I worked at Princeton University for a bit, where I had to actually do a karaoke ball type of thing. And man, you wouldn't expect that is one of the most time consuming processes ever, man.
It's forever. It's nuts.
And you have to get the direct, like, the curve just right, and you try to take a shortcut, and then it just crashes your computer because it's too powerful.
Yeah. Oh. And if you adjust, like, you'd probably just have to, really, the ideal move, and I don't even think I did this while working on the project, would just be to nest the text and the bouncing. Because when I realized I was working on it, I'm like, I can't resize this. If I resize it, I'm going to have to do it all over again.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I didn't think to just nest the sequence in the moment, but you live and you learn. Came out and it was great.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And I think it's really cool that Materia Community, you know, allows for such cool things to happen. Mm. That's definitely those and GameLark albums, and I guess now Game Grooves albums as well.
Yeah.
They've all just happened to produce some of my most ambitious and the work that I'm the proudest of. Mm. And it's crazy to think, especially for Materia.
Yeah.
When I made my first Materia Community track, I think I was 15.
Oh, wow.
Which is crazy. And you look back on it, you could tell in a lot of ways, but I think I'm still even proud of myself for putting things together like that then. Mm. And I'm just, it's been cool to watch that community evolve, you know, where, and this is kind of true for all of VGM, where I was once the baby, and I guess I'm kind of still the baby, and I enjoy being the baby. You know, I'm watching now younger VGMers, you know, step up and make cool things. And now, I don't know, it's a really nice full circle kind of thing.
Yeah, where you see like the next generations and see.
Absolutely.
It's funny when I was talking to a year ago back, and I think you might have commented on this video. I made a documentary called VGM From Carts to Hearts.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and so when I was interviewing everyone, something that I haven't quite said to everyone yet is I've interviewed quite a bit more because I am making a follow-up. But a whole lot of folks that I was talking to have kind of mentioned like these generations where it was like Doc Jazz 4 and Family Jewel 7X and you know, a group of other people were like Generation 1 and then Generation 2 were like, you know, it just kind of like there's a very clear point where you could connect everyone. And I even think that Carlos said that it would be interesting if someone made like a family tree almost.
Yeah.
Where it started and then see where everything like blossomed out of.
That would be so cool. I'd love to look at something like that.
I would love to. You know, perhaps whenever the second documentary comes out, I'll make it for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be a very, very big tree, ever growing. That's
ever growing tree. Yeah, it'll have to be like one of those website trees where like you scroll down, and then you can update. I don't know.
Right.
But yeah, that reminds
so
me
cool.
that there's a, you know, there's a generational thing to VGM, and I think that's super interesting and unique to it.
For sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. So. Usually this is going to be kind of off topic, as sure. most things are on this podcast, but who cares? It's our podcast. We can make it what Amen. We want. I like to ask every single time, what is your setup with both recording music and recording video? And I see this every time. You don't need the best equipment. You don't really need any equipment. Even if you have a smartphone, you're totally cool to make stuff. But I just like to know, you know, just to see what everyone is using so that people can get inspiration from setups and whatnot. So if you're willing, I'd love to hear what your setup is recording both audio and video.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with the adage of, you know, you definitely don't need the best equipment. When I started out, my first saxophone recordings were on a Blue Snowball.
And beautiful.
I was working with what you got. You always do.
Yeah.
And that initial burst of, you know, inspiration to do something like that, regardless of what you have, is so important.
Absolutely.
So I would never look down on people for not having everything hardware-wise totally together. Because if you can make good music, you make good music.
Yeah. The only thing that matters is the music or the idea behind it.
Absolutely.
The quality of the recording or whatnot does not matter at all.
Yeah. Sorry, hold on. Yeah. This is my quote unquote go to sleep alarm. Because I have one at 11:30, and 12, and I never listen to any of the three of them, but it's fine.
Well, you know, it's a nice subtle reminder, you know.
It's the thought that counts.
Yeah. I love the idea of sleep alarm. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, because I'm not going to keep myself on track. Someone may as well.
Someone needs to.
Even if it's like past me.
That's just beautiful. Yeah, equipment, yeah. Yes.
So nowadays, I'm primarily recording on a Blue Bluebird mic. My primary instrument is alto sax, and I'm playing the same one I've been playing. It's the first sax I ever bought, which was a Roberto's Winds intermediate sax. It's not even a pro model sax. And it still works perfectly good. I also just had it repaired, which is nice.
Beautiful.
And then I have a bunch of other oddball woodwind instruments. I've got my roommate's tenor sax. I've got a student flute. I've got a 30-year-old clarinet from my roommate's uncle.
Beautiful.
I have for my keyboard, which I've been using a lot on Twitch and just for general piano use. I have an Akai MPK-88 controller, which it's beautiful. It's like weighted and everything. And I got it for free from a professor.
Ooh, that's beautiful.
Which came in clutch. Before then, I'd been using a Nektar, a 61 key, which was nice. Didn't always, it still does this where it'll randomly like spaz out and just
won't.
It'll just not work for a little bit. I'll just leave it off for 3 months and suddenly it works great again. I don't
just gotta give it some time out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then. So Berkeley requires that all the students get a Mac, so I'm recording on a Mac, and lately I've been using Logic for a lot of my workflow because a lot of my friends were using it freshman year, and it made working with them a lot easier.
Beautiful.
Though I could still also use Reaper and Pro Tools I've gotten to learn through school. And for music notation, I use Sibelius.
Okay.
Very proud Sibelius user.
Beautiful.
And then for video, I am still rocking the Canon Rebel T6i,
tried
old reliable, amen,
yeah.
That I've been using for almost 5 years. I'd love to upgrade soon because that could be fun.
Well, let me know right whenever you upgrade because I'm an absolute camera geek. So
absolutely. I've been wanting to get your thoughts on stuff for a while.
Yes, so absolutely.
We'll have to figure that out.
Yes.
But right now I'm rocking that. It's still working great. I need to actually get on my lighting game because I don't have any lighting stuff and I've been telling myself to get it and I just need to bite the bullet. See, the good thing about my being home was that my room back in New York is just white light.
Oh, beautiful.
So that helps a lot. And that I've kind of gotten by for that. But I'm realizing now being in this space that I need something a little better. So that would be a purchase probably coming up. But
beautiful. Well, and this is a little tease for literally everyone. I haven't even told Alan this, who is in charge of Game Grooves. There may or may not be some kind of fun tutorial type of thing where it's a lighting setup using dollar store materials. That's going to be a challenge, but that may or may not be in the workings. So
that could be that sounds really cool.
Yeah,
I'm interested in seeing that.
Yeah, but I got some tips for you to on the professional end and on the extreme cheap end. So
beautiful.
Yeah, hit me up on that
too. Best of both worlds. I love it.
Beautiful. Lighting it's pretty essential, and it's weird because you wouldn't expect lighting to be a super, like, you just kind of expect it to work, but then whenever you really think about filming, it's like, wait a second, this doesn't seem right. And then learning it, it's a whole thing, but as soon as you get some lighting in your hands, it's something that you instantly catch on to and you're like, oh, this makes sense.
Right. And it's like, it's looking at some of the videos you record and just going, why is this so yellow? I don't remember it being this yellow.
Yeah. White balance.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Lumetri Color.
Yes. Oh, yes. Thank you. So I think that answers that. I take it that you edit on Premiere Pro.
That's right.
Yeah. I have my own thoughts on the Adobe product because I don't like the pricing schemes. But Adobe is
me neither.
Yeah.
See, the thing about that is I'm still on student pricing, so I'm okay for right now.
Yeah, no.
Well, when we get past that, maybe it'll be another story.
Yeah, it's a little sad. DaVinci Resolve is a great alternative. I love that piece of software. It's beautiful.
I have it downloaded because I didn't want to mess with some of the color correction stuff, so I thought about trying that out.
It is night and day whenever you switch over to... I could literally nerd out about color grading on DaVinci Resolve. Specifically, I've worked for a color grading company over here in LA where we've edited or color graded music videos. I don't think I'm allowed to say who, but big people that you've seen.
Sure.
So I just love it, and I'm not going to bore the audience with it, but DaVinci Resolve, that perfect for color grading. Hollywood standard piece of software.
Peter. Right there. Peter, you can bore me with it any day.
Yes, well, I might abuse that because there's so much beauty in color grading.
Perfect.
Beautiful. So awesome. We got sidetracked, which was beautiful and amazing, but we're coming to the end of the clock. So I'm gonna ask the one thing that I ask everyone. Well, before I do that, is there anything you want to add on? Shout outs, anything that you're doing, anything like that. I'll ask the question after this, but did I miss anything that you might want to talk about?
Nothing I can think of in terms of just initial question stuff. Cool. Yeah.
Awesome. So I'll ask the one question I ask everyone, which is, what is one piece of VGM music, album, or even a soundtrack from a video game that you've been vibing with recently?
I got to shout out my boy, fellow Berkeley grad, Znarky. I mentioned his name before because he was on Life Will Change. the track that he did for the Game Grooves Persona 5 album for Steal Your Heart.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's so good.
It's so good. He did, for those listening who don't know, he did... A rendition of Ideal in the Real from Persona 5 Royal. It's this like 80s influenced Prince sounding arrangement of it.
It's so good.
It's incredible. And like, there's this one guitar lick he plays, I think it's like 2 minutes in. It's incredible. He blows my mind every single time, and I love working with him. I finally got to meet him for the first time last MAGFest.
Oh, really?
Which was really, really nice.
Beautiful.
He's just a general cool dude. And definitely one of the most versatile people I can think of in BGM, because because you'll have a cover like that, you know, very funk driven direction, and then he'll do an acoustic guitar duet of Tifa's theme, which gets you just the most emotional. And then you have all these, you know, different types of neo soul covers and R&B, and it's really cool that there's someone so proficient covering that niche in BGM. Yeah. So that would definitely be one of my big recommendations. Just check his stuff out.
Yeah. Beautiful.
That's Snarky with an X.
With an X, yes. And we will link that in the podcast description if it updates correctly on all of the sites. But yeah, thank you so much, Charles, for being on the Game Grooves Uncovered podcast. It's been an absolute blast talking with you.
Dude, thank you for having me. This is so good. I think this is my first ever thing like this. First ever interview podcast thing.
Sweet. So, well, welcome. I'm glad that I was able to thrust you into the world of podcast/interview.
Thank you for making it memorable, man. This is really nice.
Thanks, man. All right. Of course. Thank you. Everyone listening, thanks. We'll be back next week. And hope you all are at home, staying safe, doing all that good stuff. Bye. All right.
Bye-bye.
Sweet.
Sweet.